What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets powered by FTN. I'm your host, Chris Meade. Thanks so much for taking the time to hang out. I told you guys I would eventually turn the page from NFL to NBA, and this is it. This is a special edition, a two-part episode breaking down the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference in the NBA. And I told you guys that I would have two studs on this show, and there are plenty of studs, great FTN minds that know a lot about basketball. No disrespect to any of them. I have two of the best though right here. I'm bringing in the VP of Marketing and Partnerships, Director of NBA Advanced Stats for FTN, Stefano, aka Big Money Play. What's going on, Steph? Welcome.
What's up, Chris? Thanks for having me on. I'm kind of, you know, fanboying a little bit here. I'm a big fan of Mean Streets, and I'm just excited to be on. I'm excited that basketball is right around the corner.
You know, you're not required to say that. You don't have to be a big fan.
I was told in the green room I had to say it.
Fair enough. Super jazzed to have you, and also to have the co-host of Live with Fast Eddie Fear. This guy took down 25K. I brought it up in the last episode on this show as well, and I'm just super pumped to bring in Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kweisenberg DFS. What's going on, Zach? How are you, man?
I'm doing well, Chris. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on. NBA preseason's been rolling along. We got two more slates coming up and then a couple days off before the regular season gets underway. So basketball season is upon us.
It doesn't get any better than that. First day of preseason, you're taking down 25K. You kidding me? Off to a good start, aren't you?
Start, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of luck involved with any GPP win. And I also give a lot of credit to the community we've built over there in the FTN Discord chat, specifically the NBA channel where I'm hanging out a lot. Really great community there. A lot of great people who are bouncing ideas off each other all day. And, wouldn't do it without them.
You're right. It really is a great community. And if anybody is sitting on the fence here wanting to join FTN, we have now our NBA Platinum Monthly Package is live, $49.99 per month. You're going to get the advanced DVP tools. Steph's baby doing a lot of fantastic work over there. Kyle Murray's projections, ownership projections, NBA split tool. Mentioned the Fast Eddie Fear, that live show with yourself, Zach, daily rankings from Eddie as well. And just all of the daily content, of course. And what I think is the coolest thing is the exposures. You guys really just, you're not just saying to play this person just for the hell of it. you're really putting your money where the mouth is. And I like that you can see, you know, how much exposure that you're going to have to some of these players on a nightly basis. So the season pass is $249.99. I've been telling people from day one that it will pay for itself. I'm pretty confident. Once we roll through this, the Eastern Conference preview here, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be heading over to FTN Bets, FTN Daily, FTN Fantasy /pricing and get yourself a sub. And with that, let's get underway. Let's start with the Atlanta Hawks. 36.5 is a team applied total. 20-47 last year, Steph, 14th in the conference, 25th offensive rating, 28th defensive rating, 5th in pace, but honestly, I think we can throw a lot of those numbers out. This is, I think, one of the most improved teams in the NBA. They brought in a lot of different players, Bogdanovich, Gallinari, Chris Dunn, Rondo, Clint Capella. We're going to see him suit up, hopefully, in a full season with the Hawks. What did you think of their offseason?
I mean, I think they nailed it. You know, they got what they needed. What I viewed as their number one need was another primary ball handler who can kind of create his own shot to help, you know, take a little pressure off of Trae Young. And they got that in Bogdan Bogdanovich. That's a huge, huge pickup. He's a really underrated player as he is a elite spot up shooter. So he plays really well next to Trae Young in space of the floor. And when Trae Young is off the floor or when Trae Young's on the floor and just needs a break, he can run the offense and he can get others involved and he can score off the dribble. I love the Bogdan pickup. You know, they bring in veteran Rajon Rondo. They also bring in Chris Dunn. I was going to say veterans Chris Dunn and Rajon Rondo, but I don't know if Chris Dunn is a veteran yet.
Not yet.
He's getting there. But those are two really good defensive players who fit fairly well next to Trey. The one downside to all of this kind of added production, and I haven't even gotten to Danilo Gallinari yet, is that it's going to have a negative fantasy effect on Trae Young. And not in a huge way, but Trae Young was a one-man show last year. I would be shocked if he averaged another 29 points a game. Just naturally with more options on offense, his usage is going to go down.
Yeah, so for Trae Young last season, well, as a rookie, he jacked up 15.5 shots per game. Last season, 20.8, a significant boost there. Even in playing time, 30 to 35 minutes, 19 points a game as a rookie, 29.6 as a sophomore. Zach, do you agree with that statement? I mean, this guy was a DFS darling, especially towards the end of the season. Do you agree with that statement that maybe we'll see a bit of a downtick in usage rate? And how do you think this rotation will go?
Yeah, I think Steph's spot on there. I think we do see a slight downtick. You know, we saw, obviously, like you said, the big jump in stats and production from him from year one to year two. I think the truth this year is gonna land somewhere in the middle of those stat lines, right? And you know, Steph hit it on the head. All the guys that they brought in, I thought this front office did a great job of bringing in some veteran presence at multiple positions to you know, mentor some of these young guys, because it's not just Trae Young on this team, right? This team has been kind of a perennial lottery team the last few years. You know, you look at DeAndre Hunter, right? Cam Reddish. Trae Young himself, John Collins, and then they drafted Onyeka Okongwu. You know, I still need to get my pronunciation guide out for some of these guys, but I think a really bright future for this team. You know, it might not be this year in terms of when we're talking about them contending for anything, but you know, I think this team probably sneaks into the playoffs this year, and maybe not even sneak. They might clinch with a week or two to go in the season. So I think things are looking up for this Atlanta team.
Pretty cool how they're doing the play-in this year with the 7-8s and then the 9-10. So the opportunity for the Hawks to get in. Do you agree, Steph? Do you think they're a playoff team? And would you flirt with the over here, 36.5, that win total? Or do you think it's just nice number you shy away?
I think 36.5 is a fair number. I think the bottom of the East is really weak. I would be pretty surprised if the Hawks didn't make the playoffs. And I don't even think they'll need the playing game. I think there's a good shot there. They're sixth seed. But, you know, that said, the top of the East is better. So, you know, it's really tough because, like, the Hawks are the definition of the trendy team that everyone wants to see make the playoffs because they have this young core. They spent money in the offseason. They added some really good pieces. You know, it makes sense that they're going to be highly improved. The East overall... I'm kind of like speechless on this number. I think it's like spot on. I would stay away, and I would say the Hawks are a 6 or 7 seed in the East.
Over under, Zach, 20 shots per game this year from Trae Young.
Oh, we got the mute in early.
Okay, I have to get one mute, you know, one mute mistake in per show apparently, but I'm gonna go slightly under that number. Okay. Just, you know, again, I think his stats maybe come down just a little bit across the board, and I think it's good for him, right? It doesn't mean that Trae Young is getting worse as a player, right? It's because he's got better players around him. He's got other guys that can handle the ball and shoot the ball.
He 3-point attempts, 9.5 per game last year. It's absurd. I think that number goes down slightly, and maybe not as many shots from, you know, mid-court potentially. All right, so Atlanta, kind of a bubble team. I'm with Zach. I think they get in, and they're going to be a young – well, I say young, but they brought in some veterans, like, you know, not so much Chris Dunn, but some veterans that – it's a nice balance. I like the squad. So maybe they get in. We know that the Boston Celtics are going to get in, and I guess unless for some reason they just have a ton of injuries. This is a playoff team. 45.5 is the team implied win total there. 48-24 last year, third in the conference, fourth offensive rating, fourth defensive rating, 16th pace. They brought in Tristan Thompson and Jeff Teague. They lose Gordon Hayward and Enes Kanter. Steph, the big question here for me is Jason Tatum. Is this guy ready to take that next step forward and be, I don't know, top three, top five player in the NBA?
I think top three maybe is a stretch, but there's a real opportunity for Jason Tatum to make that leap from that, like, 11 to 9 ranking range. Maybe some people put him at a 12. I'm not going to get too into it. But, you know, he has all the tools to become a superstar. And does he take that leap into superstar in this year? That is kind of what the Celtics ceiling is dependent on. If he does not make that jump, I don't see how this team comes out of the East. And their goals are to win an NBA championship. So in order for them to achieve their goals, Jason Tatum needs to become a top five player in the NBA. The opportunity is there. The talent is there. I think he makes that jump. I don't think the Celtics are a team that comes out of the East. I do think they're going to probably finish in the top three, though.
Zach, do you think that this team is good enough to win a championship?
I think they have that in their range of outcomes. But I'm with Steph. I don't think that's very likely. The top of the East, you know, I think all three of us would agree that the West is still more loaded than the Eastern Conference. That's how it's been, you know, in the recent history of the league. But, you know, I agree with Steph. If Jason Tatum takes that next step to superstardom, that's going to be a big push for this team. And then looking at Jaylen Brown, too, with the departure of Gordon Hayward, maybe a few more minutes on the wing, certainly more usage to go around when Hayward was healthy. You know, that takes away from all those guys. But Chris, you mentioned them acquiring Jeff Teague, Tristan Thompson. I think those were great moves for the Celtics team. You know, Daniel Tice still there. We talked about the departure of Enes Kanter. I think the front court, Tristan Thompson is exactly what the Celtics team has needed, a guy that doesn't need the ball in his hands. He's going to go out there. He's going to defend. He's going to rebound. He's going to set screens and roll hard to the rim. I think that was a great pickup for them. And him and Daniel Tice at the five, I think, is good for the rotation. One thing I also wanted to touch on was Kemba Walker being out until sometime in January. That's where Jeff Teague comes in, I think, a veteran presence for this team. And I think maybe they're a little bit younger than most people would think. Only Kemba Walker and Jeff Teague over 30 years of age right now for the Boston team. So I think it can play into maybe some of their seeding at the top of the East at the end of the year, that Teague is able to step in here this first month or so and kind of keep them, you know, keep pace with some of the other top teams that we'll get into.
Yeah, I think two underrated moves. I think that's a good call by you, Tristan Thompson. We know that he can get it done in the postseason, and he's done that before, and with Jeff Teague as well. I like that call. Anybody doing some season-long drafts this weekend, Jeff Teague's a guy that's going around pick 130, 135. You can get him near the end of your draft and, you know, fill the holes once, you know, Kemba Walker does come back, and who knows, maybe there's a bit of a setback there. You're right, we just don't know when that timetable is for Kemba to return. So Brooklyn Nets, here we go, Steph. Let's do it. 45.5 the win total, 35-37 last season, 7th in the conference, 22nd offensive rating, 10th defensive rating, 8th in pace. Much like the Hawks, not comparing these two teams, but a lot of those numbers we can really throw out because we haven't seen Kevin Durant yet. Well, we're seeing him, but we haven't seen him yet in with the season underway in a couple days. But KD, Kyrie, how do you think these two are going to mesh? What's the expectations for Brooklyn? I would imagine they're very high, especially with yourself having high expectations for them.
Yeah, so we might have a little homerism here, but I promise it's not coming. It's not going to be a homer take. You know, this team is absolutely loaded. You talk about expectations. The expectations for this team is a championship, and it has to be. You know, they spent money on Joe Harris. Money well spent, in my opinion. He's the perfect fit for what this team needs as an elite shooter and floor spacer that other defenses can't leave to try and double KD or Kyrie. When we talk about how do KD and Kyrie mesh, I don't see how they don't mesh well. Like the Nets as a whole on offense are a mismatch for their opponent on every single game. You know, they can match up versus teams that go big where they have DeAndre Jordan and Jared Allen who can kind of put 48 minutes against an elite center like Joel Embiid, who's in their conference. They can also go completely positionless and maybe have KD at the five and play him with Kyrie, Spencer, Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, and Kevin Durant. I mean, this team is versatile. They can do anything. They are loaded. They are a team full of bucket getters. And they're also a fairly deep team. That's what people are kind of forgetting. You know, they are top heavy with Kyrie and Kevin Durant, but Caris LeVert took a huge leap last year. That's a legit third piece. You know, they have, again, two legit NBA centers in Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan. I really like the Bruce Brown pickup. They gave up nothing. And he's an NBA rotational player on a good team. That's his role, and he fits that role well. And Landry Shamet was a nice little pickup. It's another floor spacer that they can sub in with Joe Harris. I mean, this team kind of has it all. Will they mesh early on? I'm not too concerned about it. All that matters is if they're gelling towards the end of the season, come playoff time. I think this is the best team in the East. And you know, we'll get to that a little later. But I absolutely love this team. They're loaded. I like what they did with Steve Nash. They have a bit of a therapist as their coach where, you know, coaching on this team is less important than I would say other teams. You know, I'll make the comparison to Joe Torre when he was on the Yankees, right? He was more of a therapist than a head coach. They kind of brought that in. They brought that in with Steve Nash, who everyone respects. He'll manage the personalities. You know, it seems like everything is cooking with this team. And the last point I'll make as I finish this Nets rant, is Kevin Durant has looked good in the preseason. That's really, really important. You know, when they brought him in, everyone was worried, okay, he has a torn Achilles. That's a serious, serious injury. The suspended season was maybe the best thing for him. He is not coming back after 12 months. He's coming back from 18 months. And that six-month difference is massive for that recovery period. And he looked really good in his first preseason game. If the Nets have 90% Kevin Durant, not the 70, 75, 80% that other, you know, maybe people thought they might get out of him, that is a game changer. He is arguably the best player in the NBA, at least the top three player in the NBA. If Kevin Durant's back, it's hard not to like this team coming out of the East in my eyes.
Look at the smile on his face. He is pumped. It's like Christmas morning for Steph. I love it. Zach, any counterpoints, any pushback there? KD, do you expect any limitations? And with Nash there, do you feel like maybe they may need a few games under their belt to get going? And maybe we shy away from that win total at 45.5? Because it needs to be basically a perfect season for them.
Yeah, I mean, if they get off to a sluggish start, I won't be too worried. We've seen, you know, quote unquote super teams, right, get struggle out of the gate. That happens whether you've got three all-stars on a team or two all-stars on a team or no all-stars on a team. When you bring a bunch of new guys together, sometimes it takes a while to gel. But how am I supposed to give a better Nets take than that? This is Mr. Brooklyn Nets here. And the only thing I would add is that, you know, I think the bubble playoffs where they, you know, they got handled by the Raptors, but those guys went out and competed. And mm-hmm. and the players that were getting the big time playoff minutes last year are guys that are going to be those rotational pieces. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, maybe a little bit more than a rotational piece, but certainly a third option on their best five, right? We talked about Joe Harris, Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot, who was DFS playoff darling in the first round last year, and Jared Allen's still there. So I just think this team is set up to make a run to the finals. I don't personally have them coming out of the East, but they're right there neck and neck with my pick, who we'll get into in a little bit. And I'm excited to see my man Steph take the Brooklyn Nets ride this year. I know the feeling when your team, you know, gets a, you know, when LaMarcus Aldridge came to San Antonio, I was pumped up. I hope it works out better for you guys than it did for us after that signing.
Yeah, well said. No, it is exciting. Honestly, Steph, you know, I'm just teasing, man. But I look at this squad too. You know, we've already touched on it, but forget Kyrie and KD for a second. I know they're two superstars, but LeVert and Harris and Allen are great in their own mind as well. So I'm seeing KD 10-1 to win the MVP. I'm seeing the Nets here, the fourth best odds, 6-1 to win the championship. You got some juice on either of those, Steph?
So I like the KD number a lot. I was actually plugging that KD number on the FTN NBA podcast when it was 20-1. Couple Ooh. Weeks ago, that number jumped 10-1 after we saw Kevin Durant in the preseason, and he looked really good. And it's if you were getting again 90% Kevin Durant, you're not going to get those odds for much longer. It's tough to see how that's not good value. I would stay away from the win total at 45.5. I think that is a fair line. Like Zach said, you know, we've seen kind of teams start off slow, especially good teams that are kind of have a lot of pieces they want to develop together. The Nets don't really care if they're the one seed, the two seed, or the three seed, or even like the four seed. Let's say they just need to get in the playoffs. And as long as they're playing well towards the end of the season, that's all that matters. I think that could have an impact on that total. I would just stay away from that. And at 6-1 to win the championship, I would make that bet. I have made that bet. So I'm a fan of it.
You would. Yeah. You know what? Listen, I set off the top the DFS package, but the betting package as well. I mean, monthly $49.99. You basically, did you not nail the first few picks of the mock draft?
Oh yeah, I had Patrick Williams at plus 1800 going fourth, kind of before it became trendy. There was like this one report coming out of Chicago that they really liked Patrick Williams, and it kind of gave me Jonathan Isaac vibes. And I thought that was incredible value. And then, you know, 4 days later, he starts the draft at plus 180 to go fourth overall. So I'll tap myself on the back on that one. I was pretty proud of that one.
Yeah, no doubt, buddy. Yeah. So like I'm telling you guys watching and listening, and by the way, if you are watching, hit that like button on our YouTube page, subscribe. You got any questions, somebody that we didn't cover, keeper question, whatever it is, a basketball question, we'll get to it before tip off. We'll help you out there. So leave that comment and that question. All right, let's move off Brooklyn. They are an exciting team. I agree. I think I would take the under. I think you guys both make great points. I think it could just take a little bit. You know, remember the Zach, I'm, I'm sure you were thinking about the Heat when it was LeBron and Wade and Bosch when they teamed up, the struggles at first. Remember when they first teamed up, it was, oh, they're going to 72 wins. They may not lose all year. And then they struggled. I believe they were around 500 at one point in the first month.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Something like that. And then they turned it on.
Yeah.
It ended up being okay.
Yeah. But lost in the finals. I think I know that. All right. Charlotte, 25.5, the team implied total here. 23-42 last year. Ninth in the conference, 28th offensive rating, 25th defensive, dead last in pace. Not a lot really to talk about here. They draft LaMelo Ball. They sign Gordon Hayward. He is dealing with a fracture in his fifth finger on his right hand, considered day-to-day right now. Used to be a big name, a big-time player in the fantasy community, you know, clearly in Utah when he went to Boston. I thought there was just so many pieces there, and the injuries have kind of been an issue with him, to say the least, over the past couple of years. What are the chances he can get back to his Utah days in that contract year where he was, I don't want to say he was a top 15, top 20 player, but he was a guy who was averaging well over 20 points per game on a nightly basis. You kind of knew what you were getting with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that last year in Utah, everything kind of came together for him, right? And I'm not trying to knock what he did. It was a well-deserved all-star appearance for him. And the contract that he got with Boston was fair for what he produced that year. Since then, though, I mean, it's been injury after injury. And you know, I feel for the guy, man. Nobody wants to go get hurt, no matter how much you're getting paid. These guys love to play basketball. So I'm hoping that this finger issue doesn't take too long to heal for him, so he can get back out there and you know, show these Charlotte fans that the $30 million that they're paying him per year now is worth it, at least somewhat. In terms of him get this year, I don't think they're going to win enough games for him to you know, really be recognized as an all-star, even in the Eastern Conference. But certainly the contract I had no issue with, because this team had to spend money somewhere. And while they have spent plenty of money on Terry Rozier, that contract is up, I think, after next year. But you look down the rest of this roster, like, you know, LaMelo Ball, that's going to be, it'll be fun at times, but he's not even the ball that I'm most interested in here. Really, the thing I'm looking forward to is, can we convince Michael Jordan, the owner of the Hornets, to play LaVar Ball one-on-one? Because to me, that's going to be the most exciting thing that a Charlotte Hornets 2020-21 season is going to produce. So, you know, I hope that Charlotte is able to at some point, you know, tank correctly. And I think part of that is because of Michael Jordan. We all watched The Last Dance while we were in quarantine, right? One of the best parts of quarantine, probably for a lot of us. You really got into MJ's psyche there. And while I still think he's the greatest player of all time, the mindset that he's carried over from his playing days to now in the front office, I don't think is really doing the franchise any favors. You know, you can't really just be a middling team in the league and expect to rise to the level of being a championship contender. So I hope for the Charlotte fans' sake that maybe they can get back up into the top three of next year's draft and really start building towards the future.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's in Jordan's DNA to tank properly. Right. It's a good point by you. But yeah, Jordan and Ball, that would be not as good as the Doc, but pretty close for sure. Steph, anything here intriguing? Rozier was a guy that was drafted pretty early in season-long leagues last year. I don't think he returned value. PJ Washington on this squad. Is there any, I'd look at it up and down. I agree with Zach. I mean, there's just not a lot of excitement here on this roster.
So I think PJ Washington's like an interesting prospect. I do like, for fantasy purposes, that James Borrego says he's going to play a lot of minutes at the five. That will be good for his fantasy production. But overall, you know, it's tough to really love anyone on this team, as, you know, they're a slow paced team. That's something I really want them to improve on, especially with LaMelo Ball. But the fact is, last year they were a slow paced team, which limits, you know, fantasy production and fantasy opportunities. They're not good, but they're like weirdly a deep team, right, where they have like Gordon Hayward, Miles Bridges on the wing. They've got PJ Washington. They give Cody Zeller and Bismack Biyombo minutes, and they have Devontae Graham, Terry Rozier, and LaMelo Ball. I would love if they were able to ship out Terry Rozier. I would love LaMelo Ball in DFS and fantasy basketball, season-long fantasy basketball, where, you know, there's legit upside where he can produce in multiple categories, particularly as a rebounding guard. I think it's going to be tough to trade Rozier in that contract. You know, this is a boring team that, you know, like Zach said, you know, they should be bottoming out to rebuild. And it's probably in MJ's DNA to not do that. So they're going to remain kind of just an average, actually a below average Eastern Conference team that's really not going anywhere.
No disrespect to the Charlotte fans out there, but I think all three of us know deep down we've spent way too much time on this Hornets squad. We'll go over to Jordan's former team, the Chicago Bulls, 30.5 the win total, 22-43 last year, 11th in the conference, 29th offensive rating, a top 10 defensive team, 16th in pace. Zach, we'll start with you. How good is this young core? Are there any legitimate pieces like Kobe White or Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, any legitimate pieces, core pieces here that where they can be, because we know they're not going to be contenders this year. They probably won't even sniff the playoffs. But are these pieces the right path for this Bulls team to be a competitive team maybe in 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think number one, Coach Billy Donovan coming over, and we know that he's had success with young guys at the college level. And you know, his track record in OKC was nothing to sneeze at either. You know, obviously didn't bring a championship to the Thunder, but I thought he had some good success in developing some guys there as well. So I like that acquisition, you know, on the bench for them. As far as the players go, they've got plenty of pieces. I actually think that they could benefit from maybe figuring out, okay, these are our three or four guys that we're going to build around. They really have a dearth of young talent, in my opinion, right now. And particularly, I want to focus on the front court with Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. I really think they need to pick one and try to ship the other one out for whatever they can get. Obviously, don't send them away for peanuts or anything. But I think it's going to be tough to rise to the level of a contending team playing those guys alongside each other. And I don't think either of them at this point of their career needs to be coming off the bench either. So I don't know if that trade is out there, but I think that might be ideal for this team to head in the right direction.
Steph, what do you make of this Bulls squad?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a cop-out answer, but it's kind of like, I don't know. Like, I like bringing Billy Donovan. Like, it's an upgrade from, you know, what they were dealing with last year. So, you know, I like bringing Billy. I like Kobe White. I think Kobe has a legit future. I want to see him make that leap. And I think, you know, the Bulls ceiling, if Kobe White plays well, is kind of being like a 7 or 8 seed or kind of just getting into that play-in tournament. That said, we have this young core has been kind of together for a bit, right? And like Zach said, they kind of have too many pieces, and they just brought in another piece in Patrick Williams. Where is he going to fit when Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen need to get minutes, as well as Otto Porter and Thad Young, right? Like, that is a crowded front court. So I don't really feel great about this team. I appreciate their talent. I think Zach LaVine's talented. I don't think he's a piece you build around. I think he's a piece you kind of have as your option three, kind of like what a Caris LeVert is in Brooklyn. I'm with Zach. Like, they need to move someone. There's too much there, and it's tough to see how any of these like kind of guys like Wendell Carter Jr. or Lauri Markkanen are going to develop if they're also giving guys like Otto Porter and Thad Young and Patrick Williams minutes. So they kind of have to make some decisions and move off some people.
Yeah, I don't think it's a cop-out answer, because I think there's just a lot of question marks with this team. Yeah, right? We still don't know who some of these players are, if they can take that next leap. Over to another team with a very similar win total, a few wins lower, 22.5, the Cleveland Cavaliers, 19-46 last year, 15th in the conference, bottom five team offensively, dead last defensively, 23rd in pace. Steph, we'll start with you. The Cavs, I heard you on the FTN podcast with the boys, Pfeiffer and Metz. You feel like maybe this team isn't as bad as, say, Vegas is making them out to be.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you heard that little rant on Joe Metz and Adam Pfeiffer's podcast, I kind of made a joke that the Cavs are going to make the playoffs. I was kind of teasing Adam Pfeiffer there, so please don't hold me to that. I don't think this team's actually going to make the playoffs. I do think this team has some talent, though, and at 22.5 wins, I've been projected for 26 wins. I would hit the over on that. I don't think they're making the playoffs. I think there is talent on this team. You know, I'm curious to see if Darius Garland can kind of make that jump. I'm really interested in Kevin Porter Jr. I think he's really talented. He kind of showed some splashes at the end of last year. I should say at the end of the season pre-suspension. But, you know, this team has talent. And they also have Andre Drummond and Kevin Love. Those are veteran players who can produce. Kevin Love has a championship. He knows how to win. Again, I don't think they're the worst team in the East, and kind of Vegas is viewing them in that mindset.
Zach, what do you expect from Kevin Love this year? Can he even sniff old school Kevin Love? I see you're shaking your head. You're not. I don't think you're a fan.
I think Kevin Love needs to just keep collecting those game checks and enjoying his, you know, the end of his basketball career. I mean, Kevin Love, age 32 now, you know, he's got 3 years left on this deal. He's getting either at or near $30 million for the rest of this contract. So he's got it made, man, in terms of, you know, who's going to scoff at $30 million no matter what your basketball situation is. I don't think there's a lot of interest in any other team taking on that contract. So again, I think, you know, go out there, play hard when the coach is running you out there and encourage these young guys and kind of, you know, be a mentor to them, because I think once his contract is up, that's going to probably be his role wherever he ends up next is being, you know, one of those veteran guys. He could start for a team, I think, in 3 years still, because I think his game's never been about his freakish athleticism, right? You know, he plays more under the rim, shall we say, and can stretch the floor a little bit. So Kevin Love not done, but he's not going to carry this team to the playoffs, in my opinion. But you look up and down the rest of the roster, you touched on it kind of being similar to what Chicago has. Just kind of a lot of young pieces that we don't really know how they fit. I'm not a huge fan of guys like Colin Sexton or even Darius Garland, but I think it is a little bit too early to write guys off like that when they're so young. I was glad to see Kevin Porter Jr., whatever off the court issues he had, were dismissed earlier today. So he should be with the team soon, I would think. And some of the other young, you know, you guys mentioned Andre Drummond and some of the other vets on this team. Look out for Dylan Windler. If he, you know, if we have a couple injuries, that guy could score with the best of them when he was at Belmont. And we've seen him in preseason getting buckets when he's getting the minutes. So from a fantasy perspective, keep that in mind as we go. You know, Chetty Osman, if he's going to, you know, maybe sit out a game or two, if we have a couple other injuries, keep that in mind. Dylan Windler probably not going to get much higher than min price on the DFS sites. So just keep that name in mind as we go throughout the season.
I like it. We're bargain shopping already. I'm all about that. Yeah, we're a long ways away from Kevin Love and his 26 and 12 days. They were beautiful days. I mean, 20 sometimes. Yeah.
One of those fat Kevin Love days.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we're at a rough stretch here, guys. Detroit Pistons next, 23.5, 20-46 last year. I could rattle off the statistics, but it probably doesn't matter. Steph, is this the worst team in the NBA?
Yeah, I think they're the worst team. I think they're the worst team in the East, and maybe the NBA. There's a team in the West that might compete with them. But I think as bad as I think the Pistons are, they are doing everything right. They're bottoming out. You know, they're kind of handing the keys to the kingdom. And this was Dwayne Casey's words, not mine, to Killian Hayes. I like the Hayes pickup. I think he's going to be a good player. He kind of reminds me of D'Angelo Russell a little bit. That's probably because of the lefty. He's a lefty, kind of a smooth lefty, I should say. But, you know, this team's not going to be good. I would take the under on the 23.5 wins. I think it's being a little generous to them. I just don't see how this team kind of really competes. I get that Blake Griffin's healthier now, but I don't see him playing huge minutes, and I see him being kind of rested on occasion. You know, they brought in Jeremy Grant, and I like Jeremy Grant the player, but I like Jeremy Grant on a good team. Jeremy Grant on a bad team and is you know, means he's a bigger influence on offense, and that was specifically the reason why he decided to go to the Pistons, because he could have a larger role on offense. That's not generally good for the Pistons. You know, Jeremy Grant's strengths are being a versatile wing defender who can kind of guard potentially five positions while being a above average 3-point shooter. He's not somebody who wants to create his own shot and shoot off the dribble. I've kind of seen that in the preseason where they're just kind of a bit of a mess. So I don't think this team is any good. And, I applaud them for doing the right thing. I think they're bottoming out, but, you know, it's going to be a long season for them.
Is 23.5 too low to take the under, or no, we can just,
I would take the under. I don't think this team wins more than 20 games.
Okay, fair. Yeah, they bring in Jeremy Grant, DeLon Wright, Mason Plumlee. If Griffin and Rose have the same sort of track record where they go down, Zach, are you going to have any interest in one of these guys, do you think, in DFS to maybe step up? Or is this just a team where you're just like, you know what, screw it. I'm playing players against Detroit.
Yeah, so I think, first of all, I think Steph hit the nail on the head with this is a team that's doing it right. They're bottoming out. They got their guy Killian Hayes in the draft this year, and we've seen Coach Dwayne Casey say we're handing the keys to the Pistons' kingdom, so to speak, to Hayes and letting him run the show. So I like, you know, you mentioned Derrick Rose and Blake Griffin. How long can they stay healthy? History would tell us probably not very long. But just having those guys in this locker room with the few good young pieces that they do have, I think is going to be instrumental in turning this thing around in Detroit. As far as, you know, some of the value we might get as the season goes along, two familiar names at the center position, Mason Plumlee and Jahlil Okafor, both signed with this Pistons team in the offseason. So especially if Blake Griffin is out, I think we're going to have some Plum Dog days, some Ja days. But you look at some of the other young guys, you know, we mentioned Killian Hayes. I think his price is going to probably rise pretty quickly as the regular season starts. If you do have some of those injuries, and maybe, you know, we'll see the rotation once the regular season starts. One familiar name, Josh Jackson, who was a top 10 pick just a few years ago and almost a forgotten man, produces really well fantasy-wise still, even though maybe not the greatest NBA prospect at this point in his career. The other one I wanted to mention, Sekou Demboya, who's a rookie for this team last year. And I think we're going to have maybe some big-time screenshots in the chat whenever we get a Demboya night.
I'm looking forward to those. You know, Josh Jackson, I really liked him in college. Jayhawk, right? Kansas Jayhawk. Yeah, I had some higher expectations than I'm looking now. 9 points per game last year, 22 games. Yeah. But, yeah, not
He's been in the G League some, too. Yeah. I mean, but it's good to see a guy like that work his way back into the league.
For sure. Absolutely. And he's going to have an opportunity here, right, to maybe kind of prove himself. And we'll see. He's only in year four in the NBA. So he definitely does have some talent. The Pacers are next. 39.5 is their win total. 45 wins last year for this team. Fourth in the conference. 19th offensive rating. Top six on the defensive side of things. 19th in pace. Really kind of kept everything together here, Zach, with this squad. What do you make of it? Can they make that next step? And touch on what you expect from Victor Oladipo. What Oladipo are we going to get this year?
I mean, I think it's just going to depend on his health, man. And I don't think we have too much information out there on how he's looking, at least that I've seen. You know, I'm not super plugged in with the Indiana Pacers beat writers or anything, but it's the last year of his contract. So this is a big year for him. I think he's going to come out and maybe press a little bit, but that could turn into some big numbers for him. And hopefully for Pacers fans, it translates into some more wins. But you mentioned this team kind of stood pat overall, you know, from last season to this one. And I actually think this is another team that falls into, you know, I mentioned trading one of the front court guys for the Bulls. I think it's even more important for this Pacers team because I just don't like playing Sabonis and Miles Turner out there together. And I prefer Sabonis than I think most people would. That doesn't mean that Miles Turner is any sort of slouch. I think an above average defender at the rim, shot blocker, and can extend out to the three on offense. But I think they need to look to hopefully move him and get something good in return, whether that's picks or some more bench depth on the wing or even just some depth in the front court. I think this team needs to make that trade with who? I don't know. I hope they find a good trade partner.
Yeah, Sabonis, in terms of fantasy, I'm looking at Yahoo right now, just ADPs. I mean, these guys, Sabonis goes first, top 44 player, Turner, Brogdon, Warren, and Victor Oladipo. I mean, they're all top 80 players. They have some pieces, Steph, but I kind of agree with Zach. I mean, it just doesn't feel like they have the players on their roster to jump into that top three or heck, even top four. I don't think that they finish fourth in the East. Do you?
No. I mean, look, listen, this is a playoff team with no ceiling, right? Mm. And as the East gets better, a team like the Nets are not going to be the eight seed anymore. They're going to jump into like that top six. The Pacers are a team that's going to kind of drop out. They are what they are. Like, I like Malcolm Brogdon. I like Sabonis. I think Turner is okay. I like TJ Warren. I like Victor Oladipo. It's a bunch of pieces where it's hard for me to see how this team could get out of the first round in the playoffs. I just don't see it.
Yeah, and I gave you a tough question there, Zach, because you're right. I mean, Victor Oladipo is a great player, but health has been his issue. So it's just if he can stay healthy and get back to, you know, averaging about 30 minutes per game, then I think he's a fine fantasy asset. Moving along, another good team here in the East. I think Miami took a lot of people by surprise last year, going to the NBA Finals, losing to the Lakers in six. 44.5 is their team implied total. Have been linked to some James Harden rumors. There's a lot of teams that are linked to James Harden, but 44-29 last year, fifth in the conference, seventh offensive rating, 12th defensive rating, played at a slower pace, 27th in pace. They bring in Avery Bradley, Maurice Harkless. They lose Jay Crowder, who's a nice little piece. I like him as a basketball player. Derek Jones is gone as well. Solomon Hill. This team, Zach, was it a fluke last year? Do they still have all the pieces to get back to the East with, you know, a couple teams like Brooklyn improving?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's a fluke. I think that that finals trip and every win that they got when they were in the finals against the Lakers was well earned. You know, I don't think there was, you know, every team that gets to the finals and certainly ones that win the title, you have to have some luck involved. You're going to run into teams that have injuries or, you know, you miss a shot in and out in a game seven and mm-hmm. that ends your season, things like that. So I'm not taking anything away from what Miami did last year. I don't see them coming out of the East this year. And it's not going to be for lack of trying, though, because this team being led by Jimmy Butler, I mean, this guy's found a home finally, right? It wasn't Chicago. It wasn't Minnesota. It wasn't Philly. But this is the place where he is thriving and thriving fast. And the guys that he's got around him, just really clearly they fit, you know, Bam Adebayo, Goran Dragic. And let's talk for a second about Tyler Herro. Oof. Quickly became, I think a lot of people, including myself, one of the favorite players to watch in the bubble and certainly through the bubble playoffs. So, having young pieces like that around some veterans, you know, they've got the makeup to make another deep run. I don't think it happens. They're not going to catch anybody by surprise this year, right? But even looking forward for this team, they don't have a ton of guaranteed contracts next year. You know, they've got Jimmy Butler, Tyler Herro, and their draft pick Precious Achiuwa. I think I'm saying that right. And then KZ Akpala as a holdover for next year. So they've got flexibility going forward. So I don't think we're going to see the Heat drop off the map anytime soon.
Steph, they don't really need to trade for Harden, do they? I mean, they just went to the NBA Finals with this squad. And Zach is talking about Bam and Herro. I would imagine, I think, both of these guys could actually get better. I think there's room for improvement. Not that they were bad, but there's room for improvement. So this team, like Zach said, not going to take anybody by surprise. What do you make of their squad? And what's the ceiling really for Bam? Like, he's unreal.
Yeah, I mean, starting off, do they need James Harden? If they could get James Harden without trading Bam Adebayo or Jimmy Butler, I'd make that trade. I think they need to do that to compete with some of the teams in the East.
Okay.
And that's me being a little hard on the Heat because they did just come out of the East. I just think the top of the East has improved. It's tough for me to see how this team makes it out. They do have a unicorn kind of center in Bam Adebayo. Plug my advanced EVP tool a little bit here.
Yes.
The person with the most traits, the person that qualifies for the most traits is Giannis with 9. Bam qualifies for 8. This man could do anything. Oof. He could do it all. I think we're going to start really asking the question, is Bam Adebayo the best center in the NBA this year? Right up there with Jokic, Embiid, even Karl Anthony Towns. You know, he does it all except really shoot. And if he becomes an improved shooter, you know, the ceiling really is you know, it's infinite. He is an amazing basketball player. I'm with Zach though. I mean I believe in Heat culture, and it pains me to kind of say I'm doubting Jimmy Butler here. I don't see how they make it out of the East.
I didn't see how they made it out last year of the East, right? I knew that they were an underrated team heading in. I was telling the Raptors Nation that they would give them a go, you know, things like that. And yeah, just impressive. I think really what impressed me was Butler. Like, yes, he's good, but he took it to another level last year. And I think that was definitely the difference. He just is another guy that when he has a chip on his shoulder and anybody's doubting him, he just seems to really pick up his game a little bit. So certainly a superstar there. Let's move over to the Bucks. 49.5, the win total. This is the highest. 56-17 last year. First in the conference. 8th offensive rating. Number one defense. Number one pace. They made some moves. They made some moves in the offseason. They traded three firsts for Jrue Holiday, DJ Augustine. They bring in Bobby Portis. They bring in Giannis is signed. We don't have to have that talk all year. Giannis doesn't have to hear all the noise about is he going to sign. And it's done. It's over with now. Zach, did they do enough?
I think so. I love all the moves they made. I think you upgrade on both sides of the ball going from Eric Bledsoe to Jrue Holiday. But some of the smaller moves I really like for them as well, you know, and I promise you this isn't a homer take, but I've seen a lot of the guy. Bryn Forbes coming over from the Spurs is a great piece to have off the bench. He could start a game for you if you need him to. You know, the Michigan State product is a really great shooter. You know, you'll have some trouble maybe hiding him on the defensive end, but there's plenty of other guys in this rotation that are great defenders. You mentioned the best defensive team in the league last year. You look at Torrey Craig, right? So a guy kind of opposite of Bryn Forbes, probably not going to give you a ton on the offensive end, but defensively is somebody that you can stick on the other team's best player and for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen that with Denver. So love those pickups. And then my third favorite pickup is Bobby Portis, because this team needs an enforcer. You know, in the words of Coach Stan Van Gundy, teams try to build a wall around Giannis, right? They're hacking him when he drives into the lane. They're trying to knock him on his butt as many times as they can and make it tough for him. Bobby Portis will knock you out, literally, even if you're on his own team. So I hope none of that comes to pass this year, but a physical guy down low and both from a real basketball standpoint and a fantasy standpoint can produce at a high clip in a short amount of time. And the last thing I'll touch on, you know, is the Giannis extension. That was a sigh of relief for me, because I think that's good for the league. You know, we've had Absolutely. A lot of guys depart smaller market teams where they were drafted for maybe somewhere that they think the grass is greener. And sometimes it is. You look at Anthony Davis, he went and won a championship his first season out in LA. But I love seeing Giannis stay here and stick it out and try to win a championship, you know, where, and he said it himself, Milwaukee's his home. And so I'm really glad. I'm glad for Milwaukee. I'm glad for Giannis and for the league that he stayed home.
I agree. I think that's a great point. And when I would hear the rumors with Golden State, it actually made me sick. I didn't want to see that. I didn't like KD going there, to be honest with you. I'm all for these super teams, whatever, it's fine. But a franchise like Milwaukee and having some good seasons together, it's nice that they'll be able to keep Giannis there. So I agree. Steph, what do you think of the moves? Do you agree with Zach that they did enough? Yeah, they mortgaged the future, but who cares? I mean, if this team is going to be a top two, top three team in the NBA, who cares about those first round picks?
Yeah, I mean, those picks, I mean, the fact that Giannis signed that Supermax extension means those picks are kind of irrelevant, the wrong word, but they're not really huge assets, right? They're going to be late first round picks because the Bucks are going to be good. You know, this is the favorite out of the East, and rightfully so. You know, they had enough to win a championship last year, I thought, and they got better. So do they have enough? I would say yes, they definitely have enough. I mean, Jrue Holiday is a considerable upgrade over Eric Bledsoe. I like Eric Bledsoe, but Jrue Holiday is just a better kind of offensive player and arguably a better defensive player, but both are really good defensively. I just kind of want to echo what Zach said about Bobby Portis. I mean, I love that pickup. I don't want it to kind of get lost. You know, they need someone to protect Giannis. You know, that's what they need. Giannis got absolutely pummeled by teams. They hit him hard, and they didn't really have anyone that kind of hit the opposing superstar's best player right back, and Bobby Portis might hit Giannis first and then the other team, but he'll hit someone, and they needed that. And, you know, from a fantasy perspective, if Brooke Lopez or even Giannis ever sits, you know, we kind of saw what Ersan Ilyasova could do for the Bucks in that kind of stretch four or stretch five role. Bobby Portis is going to be kind of a smash DFS play on those days, and he's going to be kind of chalked that I'd have no problem eating. Assuming he's priced low enough. But, you know, I like the Portis pickup. DJ Augustine's a fine pickup. I'm not a huge Augustine fan, but, you know, he
shows up once or twice a year, let's be honest.
He replaces George Hill. It's kind of the same type of player. I do think Torrey Craig is an impactful pickup. You know, he's not going to really make any noise during the regular season, but come playoff time, you know, let's say the Bucks and Nets play in the Eastern Conference Finals, Torrey Craig's going to have a lot of valuable minutes guarding Kevin Durant, or maybe even Kyrie Irving. So I like the Torrey Craig pickup too.
And we're going to assume if the Bucks and the Nets play in the playoffs that Giannis will be averaging more than 30 minutes per game in the postseason.
I think so.
That's the one question everybody always says, Giannis. I mean, they blow everybody out for the most part. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. And if they are blowing teams out, he's getting his, and it's Giannis, so don't worry about it. You guys know I'm going to bring up Luka when I talk MVP. That's another question I think a lot of people want to know as well. We haven't seen it since, what, the mid-80s with Larry Bird three times. He's favored. Actually, last time I checked, I think Luka was favored. It's tight. It's like plus 420, plus 400 between the two. Giannis, MVP, is that like, – it seems so silly to sit here and say, is that a stupid bet? Because he's like arguably the best player in the league. Steph, MVP?
I would say, yeah, I don't like it. I think I would bet on Luka. And Luka, I think, is now the betting favorite. But we see this with the NBA, right? You know, they want to pass the torch to the next great superstar. It kind of went Kobe to LeBron, LeBron to KD, KD to Giannis. Again, I'm missing someone along the way.
You could have started with Duncan to Nash, yeah, to LeBron, to Rose sprinkled in. You know, yeah,
I've heard Zach say this before, and it's completely true. Luka just put together the best 20-year-old season anyone's ever put together, right? And the man is amazing. You know, the NBA wants to pass the torch to him. I think it's set up perfectly for Luka to win it. And again, I don't think the NBA will give Giannis three straight MVPs. That's just not what they do.
Yeah. Now I'm smiling. Zach, you're smiling too. You agree.
Yeah, man. Luka's my pick for MVP as well. So I know you're sitting there with your Mavs shirt on and you're just loving this.
I am loving it, man. I'm not just for anybody who knows me, the Mavs go way back to the year that they got Nash and Dirk. It's just fortunate Mavs fan to you know see Dirk pass the torch to a guy like Luka. I was super pumped that they got him in the draft. That's what I wanted. So yeah, I am happy. Okay. Happier than Knicks fans these days. I'll say that 22.5, the team implied total here, 21 wins last year, 45 losses, 27th offensive rating, 12th in the conference, 23rd in pace, 23rd defensively. Thibodeau is the coach there. They bring in Rivers, Burks, Noel. Oh, man. What do we say here, Zach, with this Knicks team? I guess I'll start with RJ Barrett. Canadian, why not? What's the leap for him? What can he do this year as a sophomore?
Yeah, so I think not just RJ Barrett, but a lot of guys on this team, I think, can take steps this year to kind of fulfilling what we expected of them coming out of the draft. And I think RJ Barrett is the number one example. Obviously, only 1 year in the league so far, and a little bit disappointing. You know, your expectations when you get drafted to the Knicks and you're playing in the Garden 41 times a year, or however many times it is, 35 times this year with a shorter season. But, you know, the expectations are jacked up for any Knicks draft pick, especially a high one like that. And I think you know, I like Coach Thibodeau. You know, people get on him for running guys a lot of minutes and all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, he didn't win a championship in Chicago, but that team was fun as hell to watch, and they won a ton of games. And if Derrick Rose doesn't get injured, who knows what those guys – I mean, when Derrick Rose messed his knee up there, they were the one seed, right? We were in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a good hire to kind of bring structure to a lot of these young guys that they have. You know, another young guy is my rookie of the year pick on our FTN NBA podcast. We did our predictions with Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Steph and I were on there, and Obi Toppin is my rookie of the year pick, and I think it's kind of a combination of me liking him as a player. You know, he can step out and shoot the three, ultra athletic, and I think he's just going to, you know, he's a little bit older. He's physically ready for the NBA game at age 22, you know, coming out of Dayton. And again, Tibbs is going to run his main guys a lot of minutes, and I think Obi is going to be one of those guys. So I like him for rookie of the year. The best thing that the Knicks did this offseason is not sign anybody to bad contracts. They might have signed players that you aren't too high on, right? But a lot of one-year deals or 1 year in a team option, things like that. So I think this team has a lot of expiring contracts and some contracts with team options that they can move midseason if there's suitors around the league. And then they're going to have space to maneuver going forward. So you know, I actually think I think it was a really good offseason, even if we're not going to see it in the win-loss record this season for the Knicks. And the last thing I'll add is that the final piece to sending the Knicks kind of on the road to recovery to being a playoff team and a championship contender again is James Dolan, sell the team. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
That I will 100% agree with, and I'm sure a lot of people listening, watching, especially Knicks fans,
Zach's going after all the owners.
Yeah, I know. All of them. Absolutely. Obi plus 425 behind Ball at plus 400. Edwards at plus 450. Wiseman at 600. Hayes in there at 800, which you gave some, both of you guys actually gave some love to Killian Hayes there. Knicks, Steph, anything to add?
I think Zach's like, I think he nailed it. You know, I actually like that Thibs higher too. You know, he gets too much crap for like running people in the ground. And I understand that criticism, but he every team he's gone to, he's made better. And maybe they haven't hit their ceiling, but they've become a better team than what they were before he got there. He's also been a pretty decent player developer. So I like the higher for guys like RJ Barrett. And we're kind of seeing it in the preseason where RJ Barrett's looked pretty good. I'm curious about Emmanuel Quickly. I think that's a name to maybe consider later on in the year that might have some fantasy value. He's looked pretty good in the preseason. I know Knicks fans are hyping him up. Knicks fans always hype people up. He's kind of having a Kevin Knox preseason from 2 years ago. It was last year. And even Kevin Knox is looking good in the preseason. So, you know, I agree with Zach here. The best thing the Knicks did was not sign anyone to a bad contract. They have cap flexibility. So their future is at least bright for the time being, right? They're not clouded by anything. The 22.5, I would lean over just because of Thibs, but you know, the more I think about it, the more I'd probably stay away from it just because it's a shortened season and the Atlantic division is just so damn good. And they're going to be playing a lot of good teams. So I think 22.5, even though I think they're a better team than that line suggests, I think their schedule plays a factor into that line and I'd probably just stay away from it.
I know two Knicks fans, like that's it, just two. And one thinks what you had said, just pump up everybody no matter what. And the other one could put the both in the room, one guy, and one will be, they suck. They're awful. All of them suck. It's like both sides, right? And I'm the one in the middle. It's like, you know, he stinks and he's okay. But for the most part, it's been bad, man. I'd like to see this franchise get back to, you mentioned, mm-hmm. MSG and just what it's like to play there and all the big games. It's a huge market, obviously. So I think it would be good for the NBA if this was a competitive team, but they just seem like such a long ways away from being a competitive team. One final thing on the Knicks. Robinson, is he overrated, Mitchell? Overrated, underrated? Because again, I'm hearing one guy on my right shoulder say he's unbelievable and the other guy saying he's slightly overrated.
I think he's appropriately rated, okay. Because you have to factor in like the off the court kind of attitude with his talent. Like from a talent perspective, he's got everything it takes to be a legit defensive anchor in the NBA. And from a fantasy perspective, he has the potential to be a Rudy Gobert type fantasy producer. He's got all the tools. That said, you know, we've heard about it even in college where, you know, he got in some run-ins and, you know, there is some criticism coming into the draft if he was, you know, mentally prepared to handle the NBA. Listen, he would have been a first round pick if he didn't have these question marks. I think he fell to maybe the late first or early second round. I forgot exactly where he went. But, you know, coming into the year, he was like a top 10 recruit out of high school. So, you know, he's got all the talent in the world. He just kind of has to put it together. I hope Thibs is the guy to put it together. We've heard some negative things from Thibs about Mitchell Robinson this preseason and saying he needs to kind of put his head on his shoulders and get things together. So hopefully he's able to do that. But in the short term, I think he's going to have, you know, sort of a mediocre role. There's a reason why they brought Nerlens Noel in, and I would prefer targeting Nerlens Noel in those season-long fantasy drafts.
All right. I see you agreeing there, Zach. On to the Orlando Magic, 31.5 there. Team implied total 30-40 last year, 8th in the conference, 23rd offensively, 11th defensively, 23rd in pace. This is another team that they're not on the Indiana Pacers level, but they're a team where they're just kind of in the middle. They have some nice pieces, Fournier and Gordon and Vucevic. I like Vucevic. He's a nice fantasy piece. Markelle Fultz, though. Zach, we'll start with you. Think he can take a step forward here? Like, what do you expect from Fultz?
I mean, I don't think we're ever going to see him be.
He's never going to get to that expectation that he originally had, right? That's
right, right. But you look at the improvements that he's made since he came over from Philly, and I think the change of scenery was nice, and the Magic didn't rush him, you know, and so now we're seeing him you know, play a bigger role and kind of have some highlights. You see him maybe on SportsCenter top 10 a couple times last season. And so I think he can just continue to grow. I think this is a great place for him because he's out of the spotlight in Orlando. This team, you know, if they make the playoffs, they're probably going to be a first round exit. And I just think he can continue to develop. And I hope for his sake that he can parlay that into whether it's with the Magic or another team, another NBA contract, because I think the kid is supremely talented, and I hope that he can get at least close to you know what the expectations were coming out as a number one pick. You know, as far as the rest of the team goes, like I said, the expectations for this team are they're just kind of another middling team, right? I think they'll probably make the playoffs or at least the play-in tournament, but they're just kind of a professional basketball team, if that makes any sense. Like they don't have a lot that gets me excited. I love Nikola Vucevic as a player. Certainly in DFS, we love playing Vucevic. You know, John Isaac, can he stay healthy? Looking down the roster, Al-Farouq Aminu hasn't played since I don't know when. He's a guy that I like from a real basketball perspective as well. Mo Bamba, what's up with him? You know, he hasn't really shown anything since being drafted after 1 year at Texas. So there's some question marks with this team in terms of their young guys and their development, but I like Coach Steve Clifford. I just don't think they have what it takes to make any noise in any sort of postseason appearance.
I need to get the ESPN top 10s on SportsCenter. They'll show north of the border. They'll show an empty net in hockey before they show a dime from Fultz. Unfortunately, I'm looking at the splits. February is pretty good for him. I mean, he shot 50% from the field. 12 points per game, 7 assists per game. Wasn't really turning the ball over all that much. What do you think, Steph?
I mean, the talent's certainly there for Fultz. It's just if he's not able to put the shooting together as people thought he would coming out of college, he's never going to hit that ceiling, right? That's what becomes kind of that unstoppable. Unstoppable is a bit of a stretch, but that like that superstar like offensive talent that you know people saw in Washington. I don't see how that shooting ever comes to like, you know, comes back to form. I don't know what happened in Philly where he just kind of had the yips and just lost all sense of his shooting form. It has improved since then, and I'm glad to see his confidence seems to be a little back. From a fantasy perspective, though, he is a productive fantasy player. He can produce in multiple categories, particularly on the rebounding side. So, I mean, I would have interest in Markelle Fultz in fantasy, and I'm going to have interest in DFS, you know, pending the matchup. Overall on the Magic, they're just blah. I'm going to be a little hard on them, but I'm kind of over them. Like, we know what this team is. I love Nikola Vucevic, you know, for all the reasons Zach said, but this team is not going anywhere. They're at best an 8 seed, right? Maybe a 7 seed, and they're not going to get out of the first round. They'll probably get swept. So, you know, I this is a team that probably needs to bottom out, but they're, you know, they're a little too good with a lot of, you know, kind of pieces. I would like them to trade Aaron Gordon. I think they're a year too late on that to kind of get any sort of return, but they need to, they are what they are, you know, they're black.
Yeah. Any Cole Anthony love? No.
So that's what I was about to say. I can't believe both of us went through the Magic it's without mentioning Cole Anthony. He's going to be an exciting rookie. I think he's going to have a good NBA career. There's definitely going to be at least one or two times this year where you get a league pass alert. Cole Anthony's going off. He's got 20 points in you know, 20 minutes or something like that. And we've seen him have good performances already in the preseason. I think that translates to the regular season. And we talked about it on the prediction pod with Adam and Joe. Dark horse rookie of the year candidate down there, especially if we have, you know, knock on wood, I never wish for injuries. But if there are any injuries in that backcourt, Cole Anthony's going to step right into a major role.
Absolutely. Yeah. And who knows, maybe they start slow and they decide that they're going to trade one of, you know, one of their two or their pieces. I'm looking right now, Cole Anthony, 25-1. Not bad. Not bad. You can take a flyer there. All right. Off to the 76ers. We've got three more teams here. 45.5, the team implied total last year, 43-36th in the conference, 14th offensive rating, top 10 defensive team, 19th in pace. They made a lot of moves as well. Brought in some shooters, Danny Green, Seth Curry, Dwight Howard, not so much a shooter like those two, but he's part of the squad in Philly, and Al Horford is gone. Josh Richardson gone as well. Guys, every day I hear a rumor of Harden to Philly, and I'm, you know, we'll probably hear it all year long until he's eventually traded from the team. What do you make of the move, Steph? And did they do enough to be much like the Bucks? What I'm not comparing the two, but much like what we said, the question, did they do enough to take that next step forward? Do you like the moves?
So starting with Harden, I know we kind of picked up a little bit of steam today with Harden potentially getting traded to the Sixers, where the Sixers said they would make Ben Simmons available for a potential Harden trade. I would actually I would think that's a mistake from the Sixers. Simmons is the asset I'd want to keep. I can understand why the Rockets would want Simmons more than Embiid. But if I'm the Sixers, I would push Embiid on the Rockets if that trade's going to happen. I still think that trade is a long shot, especially this close to the season. You know, it's tough for a team that their goal is to win a finals, win a championship, I should say, to make that drastic of a move this close to the season. So I think it's a long shot. I do think the Sixers are the favorite to land Harden if he gets traded. That said, the move that I love for the Sixers was the Seth Curry move. You know, I think they gave up a really good piece in Josh Richardson, and I think the Mavericks made a good deal too, because Josh Richardson's a better fit for them. But Seth Curry is exactly what this team needs in a floor spacer. He'll play that J.J. Redick role that you know, Doc had with the Clippers, where J.J. was kind of being that was, you know, they were running sets early in the game to kind of get the offense moving. And, you know, we'll see Seth Curry take a lot of early shots, and then kind of as the game progresses, kind of be more of a floor spacer, but also a player that teams can't leave alone, you know, because then Simmons or Embiid or Tobias Harris will find him and he'll hit a shot. He's one of the best shooters in the NBA. So I really like the Seth Curry move. I think they made a great move with the Al Horford trade. I thought they'd have to give up more to give up that Al Horford contract. You know, that's fine. At the end of the day, I don't think this team is better than my top three in the East, which are the Nets, Bucks, and Celtics. I have reservations of Doc, the coach. We've kind of seen it already. You know, there's definitely talent. I kind of have reservations on Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid as teammates, and do they mesh as well as, you know, other teams' top players? Now, that's not saying I think Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are a bad match and are bad players. I just don't think they mesh as well as the top teams in the East.
Zach, do you think that this is a championship team without Harden?
I mean, I think it's in the range of outcomes, but I don't see it happening this year. I think Steph was right on with the Seth Curry, Josh Richardson trade was maybe one of my favorite trades of the offseason. I thought it was great for both teams. They did, you know, no team had to give up a ton to make the move. And I think it was mutually beneficial. Then you talked about some of the other, you know, bringing in Danny Green, right? Dwight Howard to back up Joel Embiid. Obviously, Dwight Howard was pretty darn good in LA last year when he was on the floor. So, you know, a lot of other moves too in the front office. New coach, right, on the bench, Doc Rivers. I think he's going to do a lot to help not just Ben Simmons, but Joel Embiid in particular, kind of give him a little kick in the rear end. I think he's a really good players coach. We can debate whether or not we think he's good at maybe adjusting in the middle of a playoff series. I would be on the no side of that, but great players coach, in my opinion. And I think Joel Embiid was my pick for defensive player of the year. He's been very close in past years, got no votes last year. I'm not sure if that was because he didn't reach the games played threshold or what. He took a step back last year, and I'm hoping for his sake that he's taking a step forward this year on both sides of the ball, because it's, you know, he's the one out of those two stars that they have that I would try to move as well. So he's got to make himself either, you know, untradeable to the Sixers or attractive enough for a team to trade for him. So, you know, I think he has a nice bounce back here. And obviously Tobias Harris is a above average wing player that they've got there. So they've got a lot of good pieces, and credit Daryl Morey, you know, coming over from the Rockets and making all these moves. And, you know, he's as sharp as they come as a general manager. So, you know, I think the Sixers had a really good offseason.
I think they did too. Yeah. I think they needed some shooters. You don't want Ben Simmons taking threes. Hearing people talk about him taking threes, it feels like he just needs to take one. I think that they shouldn't trade for Harden. I would agree. Zach, do you think Harden, no dice?
You know, I would direct the viewers to our Western Conference preview, where I can get more into the Rockets and James Harden. My short answer here in the Eastern Conference is no. If I'm the Sixers, I would not be trading for James
Harden. I like the Embiid call. I think Simmons could be in that conversation as well, Defensive Player of the Year. I like Ben Simmons, man. I think he's got room to grow. I think people are too hard on him. I think the 76ers should keep him, but I agree with both of you guys. They're not in the top three for me. They've improved. They got some shooters like we've talked about, but I don't think that they're there for like a legitimate threat to win the NBA Finals? The Raptors, 41.5. We got two teams left here. 53 wins last season, second in the conference, 13th offensive rating, second in defense, 11th pace. They lost two bigs. You know, they lost Ibaka, they lost Gasol. They bring in Aaron Baines, they bring in Alex Len. I like Fred VanVleet. Pascal Siakam was great in the regular season, struggled in the bubble. Steph, we'll start with you. What do you make of this Raptors team still? I mean, second in the conference, that doesn't seem like that's – they're probably going to take a bit of a step back this year, don't you think?
So I know me and Zach are going to disagree a little bit on this one because I've heard his take on the Raptors before. I don't think the loss of Marc Gasol or Serge Ibaka is that big of a deal. I like Serge Ibaka as a piece, especially in his new home, and more to that in our Western Conference preview that's coming. But, you know, at the end of the day, this team just wins games, right? And they get slept on every year, and they continue to just win and win and win. You know, they're definitely a playoff team. They're better than the Pacers, and they kind of fit that Pacers and Magic mold, right, where they kind of remain the same, but they are in the higher level, the upper tier of that sort of team. But, you know, people year after year just kind of sleep on the Raptors, and they just keep winning. You know, we need to see Pascal Siakam take the step forward that we wanted him to take in the bubble. That is a massive key for them. If he does that, I mean, I could see this team being a 4-3 seed, potentially even a 2 seed, because at the end of the day, this team wasn't supposed to be a 2 seed last year, and they ended up being a 2 seed. You know, the talent is not as good, I would say, as other Eastern Conference teams. I think they have a great head coach. I think they have a great leader in Kyle Lowry. And I believe in Pascal Siakam. I think he's going to kind of hit that ceiling that we saw where he played with Kawhi, where everyone was like, oh, man, like who's Siakam? What's his nickname again? It's like Spicy. Is it Spicy P?
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I think this team is fine. I like this team. I don't think they're going to come out of the East. I kind of like that over on the 41.5, just because I think it's not respectful to kind of what the Raptors have done. Like, you know, they put it right in, like, they've routinely finished better than the Sixers, right? And the Sixers are projected for 4 more wins than them. I don't think the Sixers have done so much more to, I guess, generate that amount of love compared to the Raptors. And one guy to keep your eye out on is our DFS darling, Chris Boucher, who's going to have a little bit of an increased role. I know Zach will probably touch on him a little bit next, but you know, this man is a fantasy point per minute monster. If the minutes are there, even if it's 15, 17 minutes, obviously depending on his price, but this guy is going to produce someone I would look to acquire or draft maybe a round early in season long fantasy, just because if Aaron Baines goes down, and we've seen Aaron Baines be injury prone, the starting center is Chris Boucher. It's not going to be Alex Len. And Chris Boucher playing 25 minutes a game is a legit fantasy asset. So keep your eye out on him.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people in Toronto love Chris Boucher. it seems like it's all they talk about is Chris Boucher. They want him to get some more minutes. The floor is yours, Kweisenberg DFS. What do you think of Kwai's former squad here?
Yeah, so Steph alluded to it a little bit. I'm kind of on the opposite end here. I think the you know, so-called honeymoon is over. You know, the championship is now 2 years in the past. I really think losing Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka, well, both of those guys obviously passed their prime, right? Really good defenders in their prime and still above average at their advanced age in terms of NBA years, of course. Losing those two to me is those guys were the anchors of the defense. And obviously Pascal Siakam, a good defender, OG Anunoby took a step up last year, I thought, when he was on the floor. And obviously Kyle Lowry is just the mainstay. He's Mr. Raptor, right, at this point. Replacing those two with Aaron Baines, you know, it's a package deal. You get the Aaron Baines fan club Twitter account comes with him. So that's, you know, it's an extra bonus for Toronto there. But him and Alex Len, for this team to succeed and kind of exceed my expectations for him, I think we talked about Pascal Siakam. He's got to get back to the level that he was playing at when Kawhi was next to him. He, to me, hasn't proven that he can play to that level when he's supposed to be the guy, right? So if we see him come out and really be getting after it like he was 2 years ago in the championship year, and maybe I'll start to think twice about my takes here, but I just don't think they've done enough to really stem the tide of these other Eastern Conference teams improving, I think. And I don't really need to go any more in on Boucher, because if you play NBA DFS and you don't have never played Chris Boucher, you're missing out, man. When you get a chance to play that guy, you put him in your lineup. Another guy I want to touch on that Coach Nurse was talking about maybe getting a lot of minutes. One of the first guys off the bench this year is DeAndre Bembry, coming over from the Atlanta Hawks. He's been making a little bit of noise in training camp with them. Like I said, I saw some quotes from Coach Nurse. So not a season long guy by any means, I wouldn't think, but somebody to keep an eye on, especially if there's an injury to a Kyle Lowry or a Fred VanVleet, who, congrats, Fred VanVleet, getting paid, well deserved. I would come in slightly under that win total.
I thought maybe he would leave when he was talking Fred VanVleet, when he was like, listen, I'm not giving anybody a home discount. I'm getting paid. And yep. I know that they had the money there, so good for him. He's an exciting player who showed up at times last year too, for sure. Yep. So I agree. Both of you guys, actually. Like Steph says, Vegas doesn't really – kind of give them the respect. I didn't think that they gave them the respect last year when Kawhi left. A lot of people, and especially in Toronto, you hear people, I hear it all the time in the media, up here is, listen, they're counting us out again, is what they're saying. And I'm not a Raptors guy here, obviously, but I thought that they belonged, as one of the better teams last year, I'll say that, in the East. But I do feel like the Ibaka and Gasol, as much as they are getting up there in age, I do feel like they will feel that effect as well. Gasol was pretty good, man, in that championship run. But yeah, he's definitely not the same player anymore. One more team here to talk about: Washington, the Wizards, 32.5, 25-47 last year, 10th in the conference, 16th offensively, 29th defensively, played at a high pace, I believe top five. Big deal. Wow, what a trade before the season started. Westbrook for John Wall. I know you guys have talked at length about this, but for the Mean Streets fans out there, there's a couple of them. They want to hear your guys' takes. Zach, we'll start with you. What was your original thought when you heard Westbrook for Wall, and what does it do for the Wizards?
Yeah, so for both teams, I think it was just kind of eh. Like, I didn't think it really improved the chances of either franchise in terms of championship contention. Both good players. The last time we saw John Wall, obviously an all-star caliber player, and I think he's looked good for Houston in some of these preseason games. But in terms of the Wizards getting Russell Westbrook, again, this team's not going to contend. I think it's going to push them to the playoffs, and that's exciting for this franchise that hasn't had a lot to be excited about in the recent past. Westbrook, outside of maybe taking some bad shots that people like to chuckle at every now and then, this guy is a great teammate. I've never heard any stories about him being any sort of issue in the locker room, not being positive. And we all know that he doesn't give anything but 100% every time he's on the basketball court, whether that's in practice or in the game. So I think he was the biggest winner of the trade, getting away from James Harden. And getting to a new city where he can kind of, I think he's got some good pieces around him. I think we'll see a little bit more of that Oklahoma City Russell Westbrook, hopefully continuing to pull back a little bit on his three-point attempts. But the fact that he's got Bradley Beal, who can take the last shot, Bradley Beal doesn't need the ball in his hands to put up big stats. And Russell Westbrook can set him up all day. Then he's got Davis Bertans, the Latvian laser, four-fingered assassin. Congrats to him on getting paid.
Yeah.
Maybe the only good thing that Marcus Morris has ever done for anybody is forcing that trade from San Antonio to Washington to clear up the cap space when he didn't even sign at the end of the day. But it got Bertans paid, and I appreciate that.
So I love that. Westbrook with Houston, 27.2 points per game, the most since 2016. The third highest in his career. Now 7.9 rebounds, 7 assists. 3.7 threes, the attempts per game. So yeah, taking a lot of threes, but he did take more, in his OKC days. Average triple-double, we know that from his OKC days. What do you think, Steph? Is he more like OKC Westbrook or is he Houston Westbrook? I'm not saying either is bad. But in fantasy land, you guys know DFS. Man, how expensive was he during that run? He was up in the 12. Was he in 12-something, 12-4, 12-5?
He hit 13K.
Is he ever get to 13K? as a member of Washington, you're shaking your head no. And what does it do for Beal? A little bit of a slight downtick usage-wise, maybe points?
So I would say only if Bradley Beal gets hurt does Russell Westbrook see that price go way up.
Right.
I think we kind of see something in between what we saw in Houston and what we saw in Oklahoma City with no KD, right? You know, Bradley Beal is still a primary ball handler who's going to absorb a ton of usage, and Russell Westbrook's going to let Bradley Beal get his. I don't really think it has much of an impact on Westbrook based on what we saw last year with Harden. I think Westbrook's going to get his. I think Beal's going to get his. Beal's probably not going to average 30 points a game. He might fall into like that 27 points a game kind of area. But, you know, that's fine. You know, that's like Bradley Beal is an elite scorer. And, you know, it's going to be fun to watch this team. I, you know, just to touch on the question you asked, Zach, you know, when I first heard this trade, I was like, I love this for the Wizards. I thought they like Westbrook's contract and Wall's contract are both bad contracts. I thought they got the lesser of the negative assets, right? Just because we haven't seen John Wall play in 2 years. I will say my kind of point, my mind has changed a little bit watching John Wall in the preseason. He looks good. And I think he kind of falls in this to what I said with Kevin Durant, where he wasn't coming back from 12 months of Achilles surgery. It's been, I think it's an 18 to 24 months for John Wall because he's had two surgeries and he's looked good and he's had the time to rehab. And so I like the trade overall for both teams. I think something had to happen. I think Houston's just doing whatever they're doing. And like, you know, they're just kind of in limbo. Right. And so I have no problem with what they did. They picked up an asset to, you know, to bring on John Wall. And the Wizards, I think they're a playoff team. I think they're going to be a fun team to watch. They're going to play with excellent pace. For DFS purposes, this is going to be a team we're going to want to attack whenever they're on the slate just because of the pace they're going to play. And I don't think they're going to be a very good defensive team. I don't think they'll be 29th like they were last year. But they'll probably fall in that 20th range, 18th to 20th range. And the how fast they play will play a factor into that. So, yeah, that's kind of my Wizards ramble. I like the move for Westbrook. I don't think it has too big of an impact on Bradley Beal or Russell Westbrook. I think both are fine fantasy targets.
Playoff team?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Jack?
Yeah. I think they're in. And if they don't get in that top eight, I could see them in that play-in tournament as the seven seed, right? But I think they end up making it in. Russell Westbrook in a winner-go-home game, I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. I think Washington fans should be fired up. I think they should be excited. And what you said, Zach, is spot on. I mean, Westbrook's going to give it 100% every single time. I like the over, 32.5. I think that just those two guys alone will win them enough games to be a better team than, you know, a 500 basketball team. So I think that they get in. I think it's a bet that I would make. But
I think you could argue they're better than the Pacers. That might seem like a stretch, but, you know,
waiting for the end for the hot takes.
I mean, you look at their rosters, like, at least they're more exciting than the Pacers. Maybe that's all it is. Yeah. I'm biased. I'm just tired of watching the Pacers. I was going to say they're better than the Magic, but that's not a hot take at all. Like, they're definitely better than the Magic.
No. Pacers hater.
I'm going to say it on Mean Streets today. The Wizards finish higher than the Indiana Pacers.
Oh, baby. I like it too. Let's go. Okay. Recap. That's your dark horse right there. The Wizards. I'll just give you that one. Top three. Give me the top three. And who comes out of the Eastern Conference? I already know, but come on. Tell me anyways. I need to hear it again.
I'll say Bucks are going to finish first.
Okay.
Celtics will finish second, and I'll have the Nets finishing third. We kind of talked about this with the Nets. I think they're going to come off to not like a slow start, but I don't think they'll lose a couple games early, just kind of getting the pieces in place, where I think the Celtics will get off to a better start and finish at a higher position. And also home court advantage doesn't really matter as much this year than it has in past years. So the Nets don't really care if they finish one, two, or three. But I have the Nets coming out of the East. They are my championship team. I think they'll win the NBA Finals. I think they're the best team in the NBA come playoff time. And so the Nets are the team I have coming out.
They're one of the teams that I'm really looking forward to seeing play basketball this year for sure. And I'm a big Nash guy, so I'm happy that he's behind the bench. He tried to bring over Dirk. That wasn't happening. Zach, top three, who comes out of the East? Give me a dark horse. Maybe not to come out of the East, but just to compete and be like a playoff team.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I promise we didn't compare notes before this, but I have the same top three the same order. It's Bucks one for me, Boston two, and then Brooklyn three. And I, to me, the Bucks are coming out of the East. I have them losing to the Clippers in the finals, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest, if any of those three teams ended up coming out of the East. And I guess you could say my dark horse to come out would probably be Philadelphia if they really put it together. And you know, again, maybe they make a midseason trade. Who knows? But in terms of dark horse for the playoffs, I think the Hawks have pieces to make a midseason deal. You know, I'll wait to the Western Conference preview to give you my potential Hawks trade. But you know, I think seeing them creep up into maybe the 5 seed, that's my dark horse pick.
Appreciate it, fellas. You guys are fantastic. I told you guys listening and watching that these guys would put you over the fence and into FTN. Check out all of their work. Give them both a follow at Big Money Play, at Quisenberg DFS. Thank you guys both for all the hard work and taking the time here to do this. Good luck in the NBA, the NBA season, and I'm sure we're going to talk again soon. I mean, we're going to talk minutes after this, but on the Mean Street airwaves, I'm sure we'll talk. All right, good luck to everybody out there. Again, if you're watching on YouTube, you have a question, both of these guys are very interactive on Twitter and social media as well. They will respond to you, and if you have a question, just leave it there in the YouTube section. Hope you enjoyed it, and make sure you watch that Western Conference preview as well. We'll talk to you guys soon. Cheers.